You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later in the show, we'll hear the latest about a possible federal government shutdown.
First, economist Tyler Cowen joins us to talk about his new book about the future of work, income, and happiness in the United States. The book, Average is Over, Powering America Beyond the Age of the Great Stagnation. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Well, Tyler, this is a sequel of sorts to your previous book, The Great Stagnation. You follow up on the case there that we'll see a continued thinning out of the middle class in the U.S. Let's start there. Why are we going to see a decline, a further decline in the middle class?
I think there are two main factors. One is the internet and automation, and the second is globalization. But the people who are productive can earn much more than ever before by selling to global markets. On the other hand, people who have less skills, they're competing against a lot of other laborers. So I think we'll see in America in the future where you'll have, say, 15 or 20% of us living like millionaires and a lot of the others with fairly stagnant incomes.
Let's talk about those two groups, the 15% first. Who is likely to be in that category?
Obviously, CEOs, investors, but also individuals with strong technical skills, individuals who work in advanced parts of the healthcare sector. I would say individuals who can work in ways where their productivity is augmented by computers and software.
And then the other 85%, who are they?
Those are a wide mix of people. I would say the biggest losers will be people who, in essence, with their labor, are competing against computers, and they have already seen their inflation-adjusted wages fall. But I think in that large lower middle class, there'll be a lot of people who simply are deciding to live a kind of bohemian lifestyle.
So the starving artists who aren't quite starving.
That's right.
Well, a lot of people, I think, will probably hear your story of this rise of income inequality, 15% up here, the rest of us down there, and think that's bad news. I think part of what you're saying in your book is there are bad elements to it, but it is not all in all necessarily a bad thing. Why not?
I think it's, you know, both a utopia and a dystopia. Keep in mind, it's not as if we're talking about a world where jobs are eliminated and nothing good has happened. Jobs are eliminated in part because machines can produce much more for us. So a lot more things will be very cheap or free, for instance. There'll be a lot of ways of having opportunity if you're talented. It will be easier for your talent to be spotted. Value will be measured more. So, you know, I sometimes say that when it comes to revenue and wages, I'm a pessimist, but often when it comes to happiness, I'm an optimist.
So what will happiness look like for someone who's not living what used to be that middle-class American dream of a solid-paying factory job or white-collar middle-class job? What is happiness like then at their new lower wage scale?
Well, this will be a world where, say, a lot of education is available for free. A lot of medical diagnosis is available for free. There will be driverless cars liberating us from daily commutes, so people will be able to live in cheaper areas. So measured pay will be low, but measured pay or GDP, they won't reflect human welfare the ways they have in the past. There'll be a lot of scope for creativity and reaching out to audiences and using social networking. I don't want to say this is by any means a completely positive picture, but I really do think it will be very mixed, a lot of pluses and a lot of minuses.
A lot of political scientists over the years have seen the middle class as big players in the emergence of what we see now as modern-day democratic capitalist societies or liberal democracy, whatever phrase you want to throw at it. Do you see an impact of a declining middle class on our political system?
Well, I think a lot of people will become less engaged. But keep in mind, as a nation, we'll also be aging much more. Older people vote more regularly. Older societies also tend to be more peaceful. So I think we will make a transition to this new order, and I think it will be more or less stable.
That transition sounds like it could be difficult, though. I mean, a lot of people now probably have expectations of continued middle-class relative affluence or hoping to achieve what their parents did as they come out of school, and it's not going to be there, it sounds like. Do you see discontent with that among the people who are in that 85% category?
Sure, and we see some of that already, especially with young earners. I think in some ways it will be like the Industrial Revolution. In the very long run, it's great for almost everyone, but you have decades at a time where there's a lot of disruption in the labor market.
Well, and then in the Industrial Revolution, you saw a lot of active political opposition, Luddites, Chartists, saboteurs in Paris. Do you see something like that now? Is the Occupy movement just a tip of the iceberg or just a passing fad?
Well, the Occupy movement has pretty much died out. Keep in mind, in the early 19th century, there just wasn't that much law and order, period. And policing now is more effective, more efficient, not always in pleasant ways. There's more surveillance now. So I don't see social disorder being the main story. I think there'll be some of it. But I think actually elderly voters will put in law and order candidates, and the transition will proceed.
Now, you mentioned lower costs or free healthcare diagnosis being out there. Obviously, tomorrow is the arrival of the Affordable Care Act, a big part of it anyway, signing up for marketplace or healthcare exchanges. The trend tends to be healthcare costs seem to be going up and up. We'll have an aging society. Costs are going to go up and up as we get older. Isn't that going to be a big stress on this new look of our economy?
Well, that's a stress, but keep in mind the last 4 years, actually, healthcare costs have not gone up any faster than GDP. So at least possibly that's a problem we're getting under control. So it's another way to think about the future. If you can automate other parts of our healthcare system and get costs under control, this will in some ways make the adjustment more tolerable for a lot of people. I think also you'll see a lot more people moving to places like Texas where the cost of living is lower.
You know, over the years since the Industrial Revolution, we've seen time after time of what I think you economists call creative destruction. A lot of people are put out of jobs in the buggy whip industry, say, but new technologies make new jobs for them, so we don't really notice so much except in the short run. Have we run out of tread there? Is that not going to be what happens anymore?
No, I don't think we've run out of tread, but I think what we see happening is smart software encroaching on more and more jobs, and now in the service sector. So we'll find a lot of people competing to be, hospitality staff or working in restaurants or being at a cashier somewhere. And there'll be a lot of people in that very direct ladder going up to a better job. But there always will be new jobs. The key new jobs often will be working with computers, but not everyone is good at doing that.
Are we going to see a decline of income mobility? Are people going to be able to climb the ladder from the 85% to the 15% group?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot more measurement of human talent, and individuals who are born smart will be picked out early and spotted and promoted like never before. So it will be mobility for one group of people. The real problem will be individuals not getting second chances. It's like how a credit rating works. There'll be a credit rating or a credit score for just about every area of human life.
Every area, even not just the money we owe, but other areas? How would that work?
How well you've done at your jobs, what your letters of recommendations look like. You'll have Yelp.com ratings on something like Match.com. One of the modern trends is just to measure value more and more. And in many ways, we'll find this oppressive, but it will mean that people who are doing well will get ahead very quickly, much quicker than right now.
That sounds a bit dystopian, doesn't it? Being tracked all the way through and one mistake in your credit or maybe your love life or your work life and you're out of luck for the rest of your life?
Well, here's the upside. If you're in India and you're someone quite poor and you take an online MOOC and you do very well, which we've been seeing happen.
That's those online courses that people take.
Exactly. All of a sudden, you have a ticket to a very good school, a very good job. So at the global level, there'll definitely be a lot more mobility. But absolutely, not everyone will be better off from this. We'll be reminded of our failures really quite often. That's what I think people will dislike.
Well, our younger listeners are probably a little worried to hear this. What would you recommend for someone coming into the job market now over the next few years to adapt to this new reality?
Well, I don't think there's good blanket advice for everyone. Mm-hmm. If you can do great in highly technical areas, that's wonderful. You'll always be in high demand, but that's not everyone. You know, I think a lot of sectors like marketing will be big growth areas. Just a question, how do you get the attention of other people? That's becoming more and more difficult. Understanding human psychology and branding and integrating that with products, those are all things computers really cannot do at all.
What about the idea of equality of opportunity not being there for people if you're that poor kid in India or the inner city, say, in the United States or rural Wisconsin? Do you have the same opportunity that someone born into that 15% does to get those skills, get those credentials by the time you're looking for a job?
Well, again, in some ways the path up will be easier and other ways harder. So if you test well as a young person, even if you're born into obscurity, I think your chances in the upward direction will be much higher and much quicker. But again, that's not everyone. So, you know, one needs to ask, what percentage of the population is going to test very well at early stages? And I think we don't quite know yet, but that will be the main determinant of educational opportunity.
And then what does the education system do to keep up with these changes?
Well, I think right now we have a world where job markets are changing a lot faster than our schools, and that's bad for opportunity. I see schooling pretty rapidly becoming more competitive. There are a lot of experiments out there with charter schools, online education, competency-based learning. So I think education is one sector you're starting to see a lot of dynamism, and that can give us, you know, at least some degree of potential hope that a lot of us will be able to keep up with the machines.
And what is life like for the people who can't keep up with the machines? They're competing for those service jobs that the pay keeps going down further and further. I guess the people who are in the lower class now, not the declining middle class. What's life like for them? Is there happiness there?
Stagnant incomes, a lot of free stuff. I think many people will be very unhappy with that. A lot of people will live like many people today live in Berlin. They'll pay low rents. They'll have a creative lifestyle. They'll never feel quite secure, but their day-to-day happiness will be pretty high.
We're talking to economist Tyler Cohen of George Mason University. His new book is Average is Over. Coming up after the news, we're going to get into what, if anything, government policy should do to keep up with the economic changes he's talking about, the changes in work and life and happiness that he's talking about.
It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Bickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation with Tyler Cowan about his new book, Average is Over. The story so far, he sees an economic future with about 15% of Americans in the wealthy category, 85% in a lower income group, not much of a middle class there at all.
And you can join in the discussion. Do you see a declining middle class? Maybe this is the story of your life that you're living out already. Do you see this as bad news? What about that bigger wealthy class? And how do you think it's going to affect the way our society functions? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Tyler, I want to ask you about how government would or could react to these changes. First, in the realm of taxes, it sounds like taxing the rich will be the only way to go because nobody else will be able to pay much of anything.
Well, I think there's a lot of other things we could do to make living costs lower. So a lot of cities could deregulate building. It's very expensive to live in Manhattan or San Francisco, and that could be a lot cheaper. We could make education and state education a lot cheaper. Overall, we could make our economy more competitive. We could create more jobs by doing away with a lot of occupational licensing. I'm not predicting we're going to do those things, but there are a lot of ways in which we could make sort of lower middle class existence a lot more bearable.
The argument, I assume, from some people would be, well, we have those regulations for a reason, for safe housing, to make sure people are qualified for these occupations. Do we lose something when we lighten up on some of that regulation?
Well, there's a whole bunch of states, for instance, where you need a license to be an interior designer, or most states you need a license to be a barber or a beautician. Is that really necessary? It becomes a way of protecting the incomes of the incumbents and limiting job creation. So I'm not saying you should be able to be a doctor without proper background, but most occupational licensing, I think, just isn't needed.
You write about the idea of more people, more workers becoming entrepreneurs of one sort or another themselves. Do you see that rising as a common thing?
We see more part-time employment. We see more freelancing. We see people stringing different jobs together, not always in ways which are glamorous. The word entrepreneur sounds so glamorous, but often being an entrepreneur is a pretty tough way of getting by, like, say, running a food truck. We're going to see a lot more service jobs, more people being yoga instructors, more people looking after the elderly, more nannies. Some of those jobs will be paid very well. But again, it will be quite a mixed set of wages.
We won't all be Steve Jobs.
That's right.
We'll go to the phones now. We've got Brian with us in Whitewater. Brian, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm just curious, what kind of effect is this shift going to have on students that are just starting school or just getting out and have student loans or credit cards or just debt kind of looming over them as they enter the work field and it's in this shift?
I know your group is the group that is losing the most in this transition, and I think it's already very tough. Starting salaries for four-year college graduates were higher in the year 2000 than they are today, and this I don't think will be reversed anytime soon. So it's a serious problem. One hopes that the investment has been in useful skills.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Tyler, you look for inspiration on how we can live happier with less to some third world countries. What can we learn from places where there's not quite so much money already?
Well, I wouldn't say inspiration. I would just point out when people have lower incomes, they do adjust in a lot of different ways, not all of which are pleasant. But there's a kind of disconnect in this country between incomes and expectations. So a lot of groups have taken hits to their income, but they haven't yet adjusted their expectations. So typically, if people's incomes fall, they might be willing to move to another state to get another job. But we've been doing that less rather than more, and I don't think that's going to prove stable.
Some people look at what you're writing about in this future you're describing and say, this isn't fair. There shouldn't be a group up there with all the money and a group down here with none. What would you say to that?
Well, maybe it's not fair. You know, what's fair is often in the eye of the beholder. I do think most of the high salaries will correspond to high productivity. But again, that doesn't mean it's fair. I think at the same time, a society can become more meritocratic and also more unfair. Maybe that's what we're in for.
For a long time, we looked at rising technology as freeing up our labor at home and at work, and it would fund a life of prosperity for all of us. We're so much more productive per unit of human. Is that sort of what we're stumbling into here, or is there a rosier outlook that we could have gotten into had things gone a little differently?
Well, I think what's also happened is a big increase in international trade came along at the same time as the Internet. And the Internet and cell phones mean it's very possible to manage at a distance. So good managers get paid much more, but unskilled laborers are, in essence, competing against workers in China. And I think that's pushed the split even further between high earners and lower earners. And frankly, I don't think there's that much we could have done about it. The rise of China has been out of our hands, and we're not going to destroy the Internet.
That reminds me, you wrote an interesting bit about the value of managers. I know a lot of people probably through their work lives have looked at the middle manager, say, as you know, a bit of dead weight. They're not actually doing anything. You make the case that they actually provide a lot more value and are worth the higher pay. Talk about that.
Managers coordinate people. They also inspire people. They set expectations. And you can't outsource your managing abroad, and you can't turn your managing over to computers for the most part. So I think what's already a well-paid sector is going to earn a lot more in the future, and that's good managers. It's a very tough skill to have. It requires a lot of experience, and those people will see big income gains.
And it sounds like, whereas in the movie The Graduate, the advice was plastics, it sounds like the advice that you're giving now as I read your book is learn to work with technology as opposed to against it if you want to get up into that top 15%.
That's right, and figure out what can you do that technology can't. So I think managing, marketing, persuasion, inspiration, but in ways where you work with machines.
And I wanted, since we've got you on the phone, I hope you don't mind me throwing you a curveball. Of course, we're watching to see what happens with a possible federal government shutdown. As an economist, what do you think this uncertainty is doing to our economy, if anything?
Well, it's bad for the economy. I'm not convinced there'll be a shutdown. Usually when there's an agreement, it's at the very last minute. And right now, we're still only at halftime. I know that's a little sad and pathetic, but that's what Washington has come to, I'm afraid.
All right, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Tyler Cowen, professor of economics at George Mason University. His new book is Average is Over, Powering America Beyond the Age of the Great Stagnation.